Hey, what up, y'all? It's your girl, Vivica Fox. Welcome to an all-new Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. We are going bigger and bolder. I'm your go-to girl for people, ideas, knowledge, inspiration, faith, love, truth, success, and of course, F-U-N fun. Your hustle is going to get an upgrade with the most surprising, exciting, and fabulous guests from all walks of life, darlings. You're in good hands. So don't forget to subscribe and download to Hustlin' with Vivica A. Fox. All right, y'all. You got to buckle up today because today we're going to go into the world of sports. Y'all know me. I'm a sports junkie. I love sports. You know, growing up, I played basketball, volleyball, track, and I was a cheerleader. So I know a little something about sports. So I always love to make sure that, you know, we commend our female athletes. So we got a question for you. What happens to former athletes after they retire from the game? How do they transform their passion into a new career? What is the passion principle? Well, we're going to answer that for you because today I'm speaking with Rusha Brown. Rusha is a former WNBA player, president, CEO of the Women's Professional Basketball Alumni Association, director of community relations and youth sports for the LA Sparks. And she's also a change agent. Welcome to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox, darling.
Miss Fox, thank you so much for having me. I'm already excited. Your energy is amazing. And I'm just really happy to be here with you.
Well, you know. I like to think, you know, us former hoop stars, you know, we got to let folks know how it's done and how to grow up and how to go through different chapters of a career. Because, girl, when I was reading your intro, you had some receipts for the children.
You know, I've been through it all. I've done some of everything and I ended up right where I wanted to be, close to the game and still doing the things that I love.
Which is so important. I tell people that in life, that when you do what you love in different chapters of your career, it will really keep you a happier person because it's like, that's where you're comfortable at. And don't be afraid to go into those different chapters. But we're going to take you down a little bit of memory lane and let everybody know a little bit about your story. So you were born in the Bronx and raised in South Carolina. Now, how did you navigate your way into the game of basketball?
You know, ironically enough, when I was younger, I had zero interest in playing sports. I wasn't trying to miss my hair or my nails. I was, you know, just chilling, having a good time with my friends. But my father was a huge sports fan. He was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, loved Franco Harris, and he loved the Lakers. So I grew up watching Magic and, you know, Kareem and just all the guys with the Lakers. So I loved the sports, but I just didn't have any interest in playing it. Unfortunately, my father was diagnosed with cancer, and when he passed away, I just took a turn for the worse, you know, just getting into all kind of stuff. But eventually I was offered an opportunity to play sports, and I looked at that as an opportunity to bond with him, even though he was no longer here, a way to have a connection. And I started playing basketball in the 10th grade, and I fell in love.
And really? You didn't start playing basketball to the 10th grade? You're not one of, like, girl, look, I was in the backyard trying to get my father's attention. Me and you have that in common. I'm a daddy's girl. My dad was, he passed away too. But my dad was just my favorite guy. And he introduced me, you know, to basketball and sports. I remember watching boxing, Muhammad Ali, watching football growing up. And, you know, for girls, that's your way to bond with your dad because, you know, most dads really love sports. Mm-hmm. So you didn't pick up, did you not pick up a basketball to the 10th grade?
I didn't do anything athletic until then.
Wow.
Once I started playing, like yourself, I played volleyball, I ran track, but my first introduction for real to the game was when I was in the 10th grade. Of course, when I was little, I played in the streets, not even basketball, but I played football in the streets with my cousins. None of those sports that I played in high school had I been involved in until I started playing in high school.
Now, can I ask this? You were in the 10th grade. Were you tall?
Oh, yes. I've always been. So they used to chase me around like, hey, tall girl, come here. And I'd be like, I would run off and be like, I don't want to play. But it really came to the point where basketball was the thing that ended up saving me from myself because I had gone into a space after my father passed away where I wasn't being productive.
Yeah, it happened, you know? Yeah. But you know, something about his spirit came to you and made you want to do the right things in his memory. And that's beautiful, you know? So now can I ask, when you did start playing, did you have to go like reserve to varsity, or did you just go jump straight into varsity?
You know, I played JV and varsity, and okay. I was, so the one thing I could do was rebound. I could get the ball and I'm gonna pass it to you. Then I'm gonna run down there. You can shoot it. I'll get it, pass it back to you. I wasn't shooting. I wasn't dribbling or anything, but I was working out with my coaches. I would come in the morning and I saw myself getting better. So the more I worked, the better I got. Then I fell in love with the process of seeing what my work ethic and how it could lead me to something greater. So I would get up in the morning, go to school early and practice, go to class, practice with the team. When the team would leave, I would stay in the gym. So I fell in love with it. And I just could not be as sorry as I was, because I was tall, but I was not good. So I worked on it. And my goal was to go to college on a scholarship. And I knew that's the only way it would happen.
Hey, all you true crime fans, this is Mike Ferguson.
And this is Mike Morf.
And we'd like to invite you to listen to our podcast, Criminology.
Launched in 2017, we've covered a variety of strange cases, from murders to missing persons. Some of the cases are ones you may not have heard of.
Other cases we cover are some of the most historic in true crime. There are 200 episodes of Criminology available to binge on right now. And new episodes come out every Saturday night.
Subscribe to Criminology today, wherever you listen to your podcast.
Now, you were one of the top student athlete recruits in the state of South Carolina as a senior. What schools tried to recruit you, and how did you go about choosing what school was going to be right for you?
You know, it was such an incredible process being recruited by all these schools. My dream school was the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
Yes.
It was Carolina Blue. And I was recruited by Stanford, Harvard, Duke, you know, everybody.
Wow.
I mean, except for Gino at Connecticut and Pat at Tennessee. So,
How did Pat and Gino come back?
I don't know, but I definitely was, it helped me later on.
In what ways? Tell me.
Just that it made me want to work even harder and understand that I had to do better, because if the top two teams were not calling for me and everybody else was, I wanted to know what I didn't have that, you know, I wasn't able to pull them. But I did get my dream school. So North Carolina, I remember specifically.
And yay!
She was in 88. God, I'm telling my age. But in 88, she was the Olympic coach. And I remember her calling from Seoul, Korea, saying, "Rusha, we want you to come down to Carolina." And so I committed. But as I mentioned, I still was not over my father's death. I was close to my family, and I wanted to stay close to home. So I chose a smaller school. Just so I can stay close to my family. So I turned down my scholarship to North Carolina and I ended up at Furman University.
Okay. Was that a blessing? Was that a good decision?
Like, all decisions are good decisions in the end. You know,
I know that's right.
It's what we make it. And so I ended up going there. I had an incredible career. It hindered me professionally because I wasn't thinking about the WNBA. There was no WNBA. I just wanted to
go
to school, get a great education, and get me a great job. I wanted to work with kids and be a social worker. So I got all of that. But it wasn't until the WNBA came about that I learned that, dang, I could have made a different decision and my salary might have been a little bit different.
Thinking back then, now?
Yeah.
Now listen, absolutely. As you said, the WNBA wasn't formed when you finished college. So the option for you was, hey, got to go overseas. Now, you had options to play in Spain, France, Italy, Greece, and Korea. Wow, I can't imagine Korea. I mean, like, nobody speaks our language over there.
Mm-hmm.
What was the perception for female basketball players?
You know, actually, they've had professional basketball even longer overseas. So it was an opportunity for me. And it's crazy, right? You would think that here have invented it, but they had a system of professional women's basketball over there. So coach called me in her office and was like, "Rusha, this agent called and they said there's a chance for you to go overseas and play. You know, they pay you, you get a house, you get a car."
Yes.
And I was like, "Yo, sign me up. I don't have to go to work yet." You know, so it was for me to continue to do the thing that I loved. And so I went to Spain that first year and I knew that was what I wanted to be doing. And I was going to play as long as I could.
What? You got to go to Spain first, girl? That's the one place in the... I've been to everywhere working, but I've never got to go to Spain. What was that experience like?
Listen, and it wasn't just Spain. My first year, I'm spoiled. I went to the Canary Islands, Las Palmas. And it was the Canary Islands. So I'm living off the beach, you know, and funny enough, Las Palmas is a province of Africa. So it's not too far from Africa. It's a Spanish, you know, it's part of Spain. So we were right there at the water. The people were amazing. It was warm year round. We had a really good basketball team. I could not have asked for a better situation. Plus, I spoke Spanish. You know, so it was really good. And funny story, when I told you, you said, you know, I was born in the Bronx. My first babysitters were Puerto Rican. So
wow.
I spoke Spanish than English. My mom was like, no, she got the, she got the, I don't understand her, what she's talking about. So Spanish has always been a part of who I am. So I was just really excited because all I had to do then was just learn the dialect. So I had the education of the language.
Okay, now, girl, you know, I got to be a girly girl right now. They said some fine men over in Spain, too. Yes,
absolutely.
Honey. Yes, I'm not mad about that, girl. That's what everybody's like.
And they love
them some chocolates.
They do. Absolutely.
Love to hear that. Well, you didn't come back with a husband.
You know, I left one over there. But
oh,
you know,
okay.
Not a husband, but
oh,
you know,
a friend.
I had a couple of great relationships.
Oh, why not? I mean, that's life and that's like living, you know what I mean? What experiences did you gain from playing in Spain?
Not only did I do well with the languages and learning the culture and, of course, cooking their meals, it was just really about understanding their people, where they come from, what it's all about, and the relationships that I built over there. I still have friends now. The gentleman that I dated, his family and I, we're still really close friends. I'm trying to help his niece get recruited to come play college basketball here in the States. Like, just relationships. I'm huge on relationships and just understanding that that impact is lifelong. So I'm and then being able to travel, because we played one or maybe two games a week, but I would still have me like 2 days off. I would get a train or a plane and just go anywhere just to experience different places.
Yeah, see, that's the beauty of when you go to Europe, how close things are. Whereas for us, it's like things are, you know, kind of far. But in Europe, it's like you can go to Spain, Germany,
absolutely,
London, France. You can go to all those places. Like you said, easily just a train ride.
Absolutely. And they have the fast train now, the Eurostar.
Yeah.
And so the years, I put 2 years in Spain, and then I was in France and Italy and Greece.
Mm.
Could literally get on, my friends would come over, we would jump on a train in Paris the next morning, spend the whole day, come back the next night. Like, you don't even need a hotel. We could just jump on a train and just go and travel.
I got a question for you. Why is it that most WNBA players today have to, in the off season, go play over in Europe? Do they get paid more? The money.
Absolutely.
Okay, keep it real.
You make way more money overseas. And even when the WNBA first started, and I mentioned how I had gone to Furman in a smaller school, but because I didn't go to a big school and didn't have a big name, I wasn't perceived as WNBA quality. But my salary that first year was $15,000.
Oh.
During the season. And I made way more money. So I was just playing for fun over here. By the time taxes hit that and eat that little up, that was food and gas.
Right.
That was food and gas. But I was excited.
It was for the love of the game, right?
It was for the love of the game and having the opportunity to play in front of my family. Because when I was playing overseas, my mom would come see me. My brother would come see me.
Yeah.
But my friends and my other relatives could see me. So being able to play in the States, and I'm from South Carolina, and there was a team in Charlotte. My family's in New York. I got to see them. They actually got a chance to see me play. So I literally would have played for free to be a part of, you know, those beginning days. But it definitely was an experience for me because it taught me so much. It taught me so much.
And I want to hear about those lessons too. The WNBA was formed in 1996 and began officially playing in 97. And though you were, you know, leading the country and scoring, getting a spot on the team was challenging for you. What was the recruiting process like?
And everybody was so excited because in the 96 is when the Olympic team, you know, our women have always been
one
golden always. And so they took that year off and they were touring and everything was amazing. I was living in Atlanta at the time, and so they came and they had the Olympics. So when the NBA and David Stern announced that they were having, I was like, yo, I have got to be a part of this. I want to be a part of it. And I watched Lisa Leslie and Dawn Staley and Cheryl Swoop. You know, like I got a chance to play against, you know, Cynthia Cooper overseas, but to see all of them on one court together and to know that there was going to be a league that focused on the women and just gave us that platform, I was excited. But like I said, I had gone to Furman, small school. Nobody thought I had the basketball acumen to be a part of this league that they were building. So they initially put the top players, the Olympians, they used Rebecca Lobo, Celeste and Cheryl Swoops. They were the first faces of the W. And then they went to all the top schools. So North Carolina, where I opted not to go because I was going to go hang out with my family. Players from North Carolina, Duke, Stanford, all the schools I had an opportunity to go to, those were the players. And then they came overseas. So I knew this was going to be my chance because, as you mentioned, I was playing in France and I was the leading scorer in the country. So I was like, they clearly going to come over here and get me.
Okay.
Girls picking her. And I was like, I just gave her 25 and 12 last night. How are they going to pick her? Like, I literally, every time somebody got picked, I was like, yep.
She said, I gave her 25 and 12, which meant 25 points and what? 12
and
rebounds?
12 rebounds, absolutely.
Boom, you know I know. Okay.
I'm like, how are they picking these people? But it was really political. And I understand they're trying to build something and they wanted people to be excited. And I just told my agent, I was like, I got to figure out a way how to get on one of these teams. And luckily enough, the WNBA in that first year wanted to get the hype out. So the marketing plan was to make sure that each franchise held open tryouts because they wanted to give the average woman a chance to come in and get an opportunity. So I was living in Atlanta, worked out. Three of my girlfriends and I drove to Charlotte to try out for the team. We walk into the gym. There are 250 women for two spots.
What? 250 women showed up?
Everybody was, and I mean 18 to 80 because they wanted to be a part of it. There were women in there that could barely walk, but just to go in there and you get a jersey, they wanted to be a part of that process. And I'm like, now I got to beat up somebody, grandma. I get.
What if I got to throw that bone and she coming through? You go get one.
Granny. Okay. Got your girl, granny. It's about to go down. So we, I made it from 250 to 100 down to the final four and I got cut.
Oh, dang.
I had never been cut from anything, so I was traumatized. And I come home to my family and I tell my mom and I'm all emotional and crying. I ain't a crybaby, but when stuff happens, I get me about 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And so what you doing? What you gonna do?
I know that's right.
Hear nothing about my tears. And I was like, they just cut me, lady. What you want me to do? But so I did some research and I found out that Cleveland was having their tryouts the following weekend. I talked to my boy to driving with me to Cleveland and trying out. And same thing, 250 women went in with a different mindset, worked even harder. And by the end of it, the coach told me, Rishi, you had a great tryout. We're going to let you be a practice player. Like, practice player. Dang.
Well, you didn't get cut, though, but you didn't get cut.
No, I didn't get cut.
You didn't get cut now. Okay.
What I'm telling you, I didn't tell her. I was just thinking it in my head. I was just excited.
You're like, I practice. Show real.
I'll take it. Whatever you want. Whatever you want, I'll be that. And, you know, just with it being a practice player, you know, you don't travel with the team. You have to sit in the stands when it's a home game. So I wanted, but I was still happy to be a part of it. So if we had training camp for 3.5 weeks and that whole training camp, I was killing everybody I could. And
I know that's right.
I icing myself because I was struggling. It was the hardest thing I'd ever done. But at the training camp, she calls me into her office and was like, Rusha, you had a great training camp and I'm going to take you from the practice roster and put you on the regular roster. So one of the ladies came down. So now I'm on the team. I'm calling my mom. I'm all excited. I'm crying. I'm just joyous because now, like, it's official. I get my jersey. I get to play. I get to travel.
Yay!
I'm so excited. And it's just, you know, that hard work because I felt like nobody believed that I was good enough to be a part of it. And I worked and I got it. And it was just incredible. So we're 7 games in. She calls me in the office. Now I'm scared. Like, oh, Lord, what did I do?
You're like, don't cut me.
Come on, lady. That's exactly what I was thinking. And she was like, listen, we play L.A. on TV Friday and you're the best matchup for Lisa Leslie. And I was like, ain't no best matchup for Lisa Leslie.
I mean, that's what somebody coming to you and say guard Shaq or Kobe or, you know, like,
this is absolutely incredible. And yes, it was an honor to be moved into that position. But at the same time, I was like, listen, lady, you're just trying to kill all my little confidence. But I was ready. You know, we played well and it was a good game. And I was just so excited to be accepted. And so I ended up playing 7 years primarily as a starter.
Yes.
Leave the game.
I love. Okay, now where was that that you said you played in Cleveland for 7 years?
I played in Cleveland. Cleveland Rockers for 6 years. And then that last time I played for Charlotte, the team who I initially. I was then on their team.
I love it. So your family got to see you play in Cleveland. And I love that.
Cleveland, Charlotte, New York. They could travel then because you can jump on a plane or even take a car ride. We have 3 games in a weekend. They'll come up, stay Thursday through Monday, and it's fine. But you couldn't just jump over to Spain or Italy or France.
Yeah. Now, well, see, I was going to ask you that. In the off season, did you still go play overseas?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you said, I went and
got my money overseas. Yes, I was. I don't play about my money now. I don't play. I cannot play about my money. So no, I played overseas. So I was doing year round like a lot of the players do now. So I would be overseas from like October to April, then come back to W, play from May to October, September. And it was year round for 7 years.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a sponsor of the
LA Sparks. Can I get some hair though?
I know that's right, girl. You just let me know and I will hook you up. Okay, I got you covered. Only thing I asked is that you just tag Vivica Fox Hair Collection.
You don't have to worry about it.
I got you covered. Mm-hmm. But you know, I the reason why I am a sponsor for the LA Sparks is because I did a movie years ago called Juana Man. Mm-hmm. And girl, what I'm telling you, Cheryl Swoop, Cynthia Cooper, Dana Taurasi came and played. And I never forgot that because they could have been like, no, ain't nobody doing no movie, da 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 da. But not only did they come and do the movie, but they played, they ran plays with me. And you know, I thought I could hoop, girl. I did. Cheryl, they put them professionals in there. That ball was going by me so fast. I was sucking air. I was asking for oxygen. I said, okay, y'all good. This is a whole different level. So I want to let anybody out there know, never underestimate them players in the WNBA because they will take you to the hole. They will shoot a jump shot on you. They will bust a three on you in a heartbeat. Okay.
Absolutely. It's levels to it. And it's so funny that you say so many people underestimate just because we're women. And seen a number of times, the funniest one being when Lexi Brown, who her dad, D. Brown, played in the NBA, but Lexi plays now for Chicago. She was working out. Some guy was talking junk and challenging her. And she was pretty and cute as she wanted to be. She was like, okay, we'll play one-on-one. She kicked his butt. And it was
his entire butt.
She got it all. So it's just funny to see how the random guy in the gym will underestimate
a girl.
But the guys that play are like, yo, we know what it takes to get to this level. So there's so much respect and love between the male athletes and the female athletes, while these randoms who couldn't even make their JV team.
Right. Think that they gonna take a sister to the hole. Not happening, okay?
Not gonna happen.
She got game. We got game, okay, fellas?
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So that's my payback. For every year, I've been a sponsor of the LA Sparks for the past 5 seasons. And I'm so happy that now it's looking like we're going to get to go and come back. And, you know, even though it's going to be COVID, you know, friendly, but I'm so excited. I miss going to the games because, you know me, girl, I'll be down there hollering. You would think I was on the sixth man. Okay.
Don't think I haven't seen you. I've watched and I just know that you are a supporter. And so many people think that, you know, just because you're a star that maybe somebody's giving you tickets. I was like, no, ma'am, it's and make sure she supports. And that's really important that not only do we attend, but we have to support because the
absolutely
and building this league. So thank you so much for your support, both as a sponsor and a fan.
You're welcome, darling. Because I tell everybody out there, you know, what I love about the WNBA games is that they're so kid friendly. And, you know, usually the season is like in the summertime. So it's fun to like bring the kids there. They can go have a bite to eat or before the game. They've got dancing. They got fun. So go support the WNBA games. They are an awesome experience for the entire family and inspirational to all young female athletes as well, too. So go keep y'all. We got to support the WNBA so we can get them big salaries so they ain't got to go across the waters in the offseason. They can chill out.
That would definitely help.
And do some movies with Vivica. But
absolutely.
Yeah. So let's move forward. What was it like navigating your way out of the league?
You know, it's funny because I didn't plan when I was going to retire. You know, like, so it wasn't a part of my thought process. I was playing overseas in France. I'd literally just won the French championship. I'd won the EuroLeague. Wow. I won four championships in 1 year with the team that I was on. And I was in so much pain because, like I said, I'd done 7 years straight of just year round without a break. My body was breaking down and I was over mentally. I was exhausted more so than physically. And we were literally having champagne and I probably had one too many. And I told them, I was like, you know what? I'm not playing anymore. And they was like, girl, you're about to get paid next year because you just won all this stuff. You can't leave. And I was like, yes, I can.
Wow.
And when I did that, of course, I felt it that that's what I wanted to do, but I didn't have a plan. And I came home, you know, I had some money, so I was still doing stuff. And I was like, I'm going to do just the stuff that I love. I'm going to work with kids. I'm going to organize camps and clinics and just do whatever. But something still, I needed a little bit more and I wasn't sure what it was. And I, like a lot of athletes, when they step away from the game, I fell into a depression and was trying to figure out who I was without the ball and what I need to be doing and who I needed to associate with and align myself with to try and figure it out. And I'm looking at, like, by 2 years, I'm like, something is not quite right. You know, like, I was still happy-go-lucky in front of my friends, but come home and I would just lay in my bed all day and not do anything. So
is that because you now didn't have something to do as far as practice, tryouts, and this, that, and the third?
There's nothing more regimented than an athlete's schedule.
Wow.
So I had gone from knowing every step, everything that I was doing from, say, 8 o'clock in the morning until 10 o'clock at night to having to figure it out myself. And I had not planned. And I stress how important it is to have a plan when you get ready to transition from the sport. And I didn't. So I finally, you know, started talking to somebody and figuring it out and working myself out and knowing who I was without the ball. And it got better for me. But that transition initially was hard, which also led to me having some conversations. Like, I did celebrity games. I go play. Be like, you flying me where? Yeah, I'm coming. I was all over the world doing those things. And I found out that I wasn't the only one. And just talking to our sisterhood that was experiencing these issues, I got a chance to play in a celebrity game with, like, Teaspoon and Kim Hampton, Annette Woodard. And one of the ladies that played with us was a two-time WNBA All-Star. She had played at least six seasons overseas and here, and we found out she was homeless. So I'm like, so how does this happen? Like, I know I'm tripping and I'm depressed and I got to get myself together, but I have a home. I still got some money. You know, like, I was okay.
Right.
And I was like, this happened. So naturally in that moment, we all just gave what we had and, you know, everybody tried to take care of it, but that was a temporary solution. So I came back to the WNBA and talked to them. Then I went to the NBA Retired Players Association thinking that, you know, since the WNBA is under the NBA, then the WNBA retired players should be under the NBA retired players to try and figure out what that transition looks like. But at that time, their board was not willing to accept the women. And luckily, the executive director at the time, who was Charles Smith, he was like, Rusha, you have a
word. I love Charles.
He's awesome.
Yeah,
he's awesome. He was like, I'll help you build. So that's how I started the Women's Professional Basketball Alumni Association. So
he loved that.
He definitely thought it was important and he helped me, and he's still important in my life now as a mentor and friend. And he helped me to do that because it wasn't just for me. It was so many other women. And as we started having these conversations, we would all be in the room and I was like, everybody's saying the same thing. Everybody has the same story. And so it became really important for us to share those stories because you always feel like you're by yourself.
Yes. And can I add this as well, too? See, this is what we need for young athletes, because, you know, they're throwing these huge amount of monies, you know, at these contracts, at these young kids, you know, 18 and 19 year olds that have never had $100 million in their life. They're out spending the cars and the parties and this and the third. But what you have to understand is that that's not going to last forever. You're going to get older. Like you said, them knees going to break down. You're going to get some injuries, this and the third. And if you don't have a plan for what's next, then you're going to be broke and possibly homeless, dealing with depression, dealing with a lot of things. So I'm so glad to hear that you as a former athlete said, listen, we've got to form an alumni so that we can look out for folks so that they don't get into depression, they don't end up homeless.
Education part is so, I'm sorry, excuse me.
That's okay.
Education part is really important because like you mentioned, these kids get all this money.
Yeah.
You're not a financial advisor. You don't know what to do with this money. So then you end up entrusting people just because they come to you and say, right. Hey, take care of you. But we've seen so many of our athletes being taken advantage of because they're
absolutely
not educated in that space. Mm-hmm. So everybody doesn't have your best interest at heart. So you got to know to at least keep your circle tight and make sure the people that are supposed to be working for you, there's a system of accountability. Checks
exactly.
No one person has to be above the law. Everybody's got to be checked. And that's one of the things I think that's really important.
Because, girl, there was one basketball player that had went through $100 million. He was like, yeah, one time I had 70 people on my staff.
Yes.
I'm like, wait a minute. To do what? It's one. You play on one team. I mean, I can see the manager to stretch out, you know, the person to travel, you know, your clothes. I got a tight little knit of people that's about five people. The publicist, mm-hmm. the manager, the agent, hair, makeup, you know, mm-hmm. the assistant. That's six. What you need was 70 people.
But see, that's when, and I think a lot of times athletes get caught up in trying to take care of the people that were there as they rose. So these are people that are just hangers-ons. They didn't even think they are not doing anything. Now you're just trying to take care of your boy or you're trying to buy everybody a house. And that's not feasible. If I go become a doctor, how many of y'all can I take with me?
That part.
So not definitely an opportunity to make sure people get different platforms to excel in. Like nobody has done it better than LeBron James. Like what he's done with his guys. He didn't just give them money. He gave them an opportunity to educate themselves and to something for themselves as opposed to just living off of him. And I think if other athletes took that mindset and put that action into play, then it would be
And not just go to the club and make it rain on people. Right. That part. Okay. Now you have something that you call passion principles, how to be the exception, not the rule. Explain that to us.
You know, this is something that's so near and dear to my heart, but just over my years, I have met some of the greatest athletes, lawyers, doctors, teachers, community servants. And one of the things that I hold close is the fact that I am a role model. So I make sure that I speak and do things with the kids to try and help out. And I've learned that success, no matter what realm you're in, you got to have passion. So that means you're doing something that you love. Like I mentioned it earlier, you do the thing that you love and your gift will make room for you. And I put together one year when I was doing a program for some kids, I wanted to talk to them about a life skills curriculum and how they can be, you know, powerful, whether it's in the classroom, on the court, on the field, whatever the case is. And I came up with seven key principles that would help with success. And it's perseverance, understanding that stuff happens, but you got to figure out a way how to get back on track. You can't stay off track for too long. So you persevere, you keep pushing until you're successful. Your A is your attitude, knowing that people work with people that they know and that they like.
That's right.
Give people a reason to support you. Give people a reason to say, yeah, I back what she's doing. And I know that, you know, you walk into a room, people judge you before you even open your mouth. So I try and make sure that they understand the way that you carry yourself, how you speak, make an eye contact, that good firm handshake. All that stuff is important because you never know who's watching. So your attitude is key. Your S is sacrifice. Knowing the difference between what I want to do and what I need to do. Right. You know, we talked about how I didn't play basketball until I was in the 10th grade and I was kicking it with my friends. But when I started playing basketball, Rishi, want to go have pizza? Nah, I got a game. Rishi, want to go to the beach? Nah, I got a tournament. I wanted to go have pizza. I wanted to, you know, hang out at the beach, but I knew what my goals were. So y'all come to my game and we'll do that after I finish
doing it.
Sacrifice, giving up something in order to get something else. So the second S is setting goals. I'm really big on writing things down and understanding that I have to challenge myself because it's easy to get caught up in your comfort zone. You know, see, if I can do A through Z, that's good. But what about those double letters? How do I push myself to move forward? So set your goals, write them down, and don't be afraid to have huge goals. That way, you know, you had to put in the work and get that extra push, you know, from whoever you believe in to make that happen. So that's perseverance, attitude, sacrifice, setting goals. Your I is inner strength. And this is the one I share my story about how I thought I was good enough to play in the league, but nobody else did. So I had to keep moving and keep working. And it's about believing in yourself and not letting other people tell you that you can't. Because a lot of times, not a lot of times, all the time, when people tell you you can't do something, it's because they can't do it.
Okay.
Believe has nothing to do with me. So I just try and inset, you know, put the mindset into the kids that you got to believe first, because nobody's going to buy into it until you do. But then you got to do the work. So you're always your optimism, having a positive mindset. We know life happens, but how do you get over it? Because we have a tendency sometimes, something negative happens, we talk about it, we think about it, we call somebody, we're like, oh my God, you ain't gonna believe what happened to me. And we just keep going, going, going. But you gotta flip it and look for whatever positive opportunity it is to learn so that the next time you'll have that chance to do better. So optimism is that mindset. However you think, you know, it becomes your words and your words become your actions. So it's always about having positive conversations with yourself. And the last one in is never giving up. Just don't
ever.
Never quit. And I think a lot of times we see people's stories at the end. Like, I know Vivica Fox is an incredible actress. She's done all this stuff, but I don't know her backstory. Like, I'm sure you didn't just show up on the scene and they was like, yes, let's go. Like, they're challenged. Yes. But a lot of times people don't see those backstories. And so I always make sure to share my personal story and tell them, no, I wasn't drafted. No, they didn't get me. I walked onto a team. I was a practice player. I tried out first, got cut. Like, I tell all the low parts so they understand that that's not where you quit. You keep pushing until you go up. And just sharing those passion principles has been something that I've done for, it's been at least 10 years. And I just think it's really important, kids and adults alike, to understand how important it is to have those 7 key traits for your success.
Speaking of kids, you have a daughter?
I do.
And yes.
She was earlier helping me get my earphones together, but I have an 8-year-old. She is amazing, energetic. She's going to keep her mama young because she
I know that's right.
Everything.
Let me tell you, with these kids, they come with you with some stuff. You're like, what? You know, but this is because they're exposed to so much more. What advice would you give to the 8-year-old you?
Wow. I guess I would tell myself that I'm enough. You know, I grew up in an era where kids were to be seen and not heard. So
yes.
I did my voice. I had a lot of challenges where I wasn't very confident, because I compared myself to other people and what they had and what they were doing. Like, all of those things I think are terrible for kids. And I just really would tell myself, you're more than enough. Everything that you're doing is going to work out. Apply pressure. That would be just apply. Keep going. Keep pushing. Keep working harder. And focus on yourself, not so much what other people are doing. Because we
get
so lost in comparing ourselves and keeping up with
each other.
Yeah. But success looks different to different people. Like, my success at one point, before I was a mother, it was about traveling as much as I could and hanging out and being with my friends. But now it's making sure that my daughter has certain opportunities, making sure she sees the world, making sure that she learns different languages, making sure that she is empowered herself and confident in who she is, and trying to keep her out of some of the pitfalls that I had, you know, just trying to be for her what I needed when I was younger. So I definitely think, you know, apply pressure, but I was more than enough and I needed to know that then.
What drives you?
Drives me just wanting to be better than I was yesterday and wanting to impact as many lives as possible. I honestly believe that I am a vessel for success of other people. Like, my success comes, I love seeing other people happy. So if there's something I can, if you are working on a project and I have a resource or a connection that'll help you, I love connecting the dots. So I'm driven by success, not my own, not only my own, because I want to be successful too. I want to do good and do well. But I want to see other people get what they deserve and just use my relationships in order to make that happen.
How have you hustled to become who you are today, the woman that you are today?
You know, I have had the craziest stories, and I'm just crazy enough to believe that I'm good enough to be whatever it is I want. And I have learned, and I think this happened when I started playing sports, you get a lot of great qualities from playing sports. But for me, my hustle has been around the word no. When people tell me no, I work even harder. I mean, that clearly means not right now. You've got something else you need to work on until you can give me what I need or make the person. So just not being discouraged. So I am driven, and my hustle is about putting myself in the best position possible in order to be successful. I'm a single mother. My mother lives here with me. She's helped me and all these. I moved from Atlanta to Vegas and now I'm working with LA. But none of this stuff would happen if I didn't have her support. And she has been there, you know, from the beginning. And she taught me, like, work ethic is everything. So
yes,
and drive is just making sure that I show her that what she's instilled in me was not, you know, for waste.
I love it. What do you see next for you?
What do I see next for me? I envision myself doing worldwide tours because I love speaking. I love doing workshops, mommy and me workshops to help build healthy relationships between mothers and daughters. I do things, girls empowerment, and all these things are the things that I've been able to do through my jobs. Like when I retired, I said, I didn't want to do anything that I don't love. And I've always stayed close to that. I love helping youth. I love empowering people. And for me, it's just really important to get to that space where I can be on a stage in front of a million people, just sharing my gifts and my talents and allowing them to be empowered. And like I said, like you mentioned, a change agent. I want to help people change their lives and something.
Yes. Well, yeah, we have to talk about the change agent. Tell us more about the change agent. How did that come into your life?
You know, somebody called me that and I was like, I like that. You know, I was speaking at a conference and the young lady, I was speaking to everyone and they were asking questions. She was like, you're a change agent.
Mm.
Like, yes, I am. I received that. Thank you very much.
And but so explain that. What do you think she meant by saying that? A change agent?
Because I think a lot of times people hear stories and they're empowered, but they don't do anything with it afterwards. Mm. For me, it's about empowering you, but then accountability, because you're not going to keep telling me the same thing over and over. I'm going to check and be like, nah, you said that last time. What do we do now? So it's always about the accountability and just trying to figure out the next step, because you only change when you keep making progress. You can't be the same person every day, every day, every day.
Yes. So,
trying to get people to change their lives one step at a time and figure out what that looks like for them individually.
Before I let you go, I wanted to talk to you really quick because I thought about, you know, your daughter and what you want things for her. And, you know, now you're working with LA Sparks. How did the passing of Kobe Bryant and Gigi affect you?
Oh my gosh, heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, agreed.
And I think everybody, and it's so funny because I saw so many posts by people who clearly were not sports fans, like, how can y'all be so upset about somebody who passed away y'all didn't even know?
Oh but my gosh.
What? He was transcended sport.
Yes.
You know, especially with the relationship that he had with his daughter now at the time. Was working for the Aces in Las Vegas, and he would bring them to the game. They would go in the locker room. He would sit courtside, and we saw it everywhere he went. He would take her to the games and sit courtside and be breaking down games with him.
Yes.
And that's something that every young girl needs.
Yes.
Every young girl needs. And I know just, it made me think about my father and my relationship, mm-hmm. and how I ended up playing sports because of him and hating how I didn't play while he was around. But when Kobe passed, I remember specifically where I was. I was in.
Me too.
My sister had just had surgery on her foot. So I had gone there to help her for the weekend and I'm packing, getting ready to go. And my nephew, a huge Laker and Kobe fan, he was like, Auntie, Auntie. And I was like, what's wrong? Like, what happened? He was like, Kobe. And I was like, what happened? And he told me, and I was like, don't say that. That ain't funny. Somebody
right.
said they passed these little stupid things around.
Yeah.
And then my phone was in my room and I hadn't been looking at it because I was packing and I had 35 messages.
Me too.
And I was like, no, literally.
No.
I had to sit and we all just cried. I ain't gonna cry right now. It was just such a sad moment, not just for basketball, not just for the NBA, but for the WNBA, for the young ladies that he was impacting. Like, he was on a trajectory to impact lives, like, for sure. Gigi was going to make it to the league. And I just hated for her other teammates and their family members that were a part of that. Like, that was traumatizing. Like,
traumatizing.
It was hard.
I know. I'm trying to hold it together too, girl.
Listen, just even talking about it and thinking about it, because he was amazing and what he had
amazing.
His own game and what we expected for him to impact, how he was going to impact the women's game.
Can I tell you, it was such a breath of fresh air to see him that way. Because, you know, when he played, he was such a beast.
Yes.
And cold, you know what I mean? And he was given that same drive. Right. He was an assassin. He would take your head off and not think twice about it just so that he could score on you and for that championship ring. But to see the softness that came with him with Gigi. And I'm a daddy's girl and you are too. And I think that that's why we feel it so much, because we wanted to see, wow, what could have been. But I thank them for their gifts, because I really felt like Gigi now for young women will always be inspirational, that they will have the drive, that the WNBA is now going to be celebrating their 25th year, that the sport will keep growing and keep growing in her honor, because you know, they did do something where they honored her. There's an honor last season for the WNBA. They did an honor for her, right? So she, her memory will always live on and always inspire young girls. So we have to thank them for their sacrifice and their gift that they left. But we miss them, and I was just wondering, you know,
definitely gone too soon.
Yes. Rest in peace. Gone too soon. So we're not going to cry. We're going to keep our lashes on.
I know. We're going to keep
y'all.
It on the ride.
We were about to go there. I was like, because it was just one of those things, like you said, it was like, no. But you knew it when I saw my messages. Everything was not Kobe. No Kobe.
Yes.
You know, but, you know, he left us with some amazing gifts and amazing memories, you know, that we will always carry on, you know. But, you know, I just wanted to talk to you about that real quickly. What do you see for the future for the WNBA?
I am so excited for what's coming up for the WNBA. In the last couple of years, we've gotten a new commissioner who's more business-minded and is bringing more opportunities, financial opportunities. She wants to see, just like you said, the players not have to go overseas in the offseason. And the only way that can happen is that we raise the funds and just make it where we're marketing the young ladies and they're getting an opportunity. And you see it. Like, I think LA now has one of the most visible players with Taya Cooper. You know, she is all
over. Yes, they love Taya.
Over a million followers. Yes, because her personality. But I think as we allow the women to market themselves and show their personalities, more people will be drawn to them, because it's not even just about basketball.
I agree.
Some don't like Taya because of her hair. Some of them like
Honey, she be rocking her some Vivica Fox hair. They did a whole little thing for me, and I love them. That's why I flood them. I'm like, tell me whatever y'all need. We sit in it. But it's good to see the girls be beautiful and market themselves and having fun. You know, that's what's going to definitely draw in more fans.
Absolutely. And because it is a business, the merchandising has to go up. So all these things are being talked about, and it's something that's really important. And I foresee, like, in the near future, like, the ladies having an opportunity to stay here and not have to go overseas. And also, like, just the number of lives that we impact, the young ladies that are playing this game. And I keep talking about my daughter, but sorry, my 8-year-old to be in the gym with Kelsey Plum and just all the, you know, the top players. And she knows what it looks like. So that's her aspiration as well. And I think these ladies have such an incredible role in growing and building this next generation of hoopers. So we got to support them. And so, again, thank you for your support.
Absolutely.
And your ticket purchases.
You better believe it, y'all. So like we said, please support the WNBA, which leads us perfectly into today's hustle hack. Today's hustle hack is hashtag passion principle. Like Rusha said, leverage your mindset, grit, and tenacity to set and achieve your goals. You can have challenges in life, darlings. You will have life. You will have loss. You will have failures. It don't quit, though. Believe in your in yourself. Get supporters around you. Get a good team that sees you going to places and positions that you never perceive. But get a good team and keep a good passion principle. Show up with an attitude of gratitude. Don't be afraid to sacrifice. Set those goals. Achieve those goals. All right? You can do it. All right? And we want to say congratulations to the WNBA on their 25th anniversary. Your girl Vivica Fox is going to be in the stands cheering on our LA Sparks and all of the other girls as well, too. Rusha, tell everyone where they can find you on social media.
Thank you so much for this time here with you. On Instagram, it's Rusha B, R-U-S-H-I-A-B. On Twitter, the same thing. And on Facebook, it's Rusha Brown. And also my website, RushaBrown.com. It's where I do most of my programming for my nonprofit, for my kids, just doing whatever I can. So thank you guys so much for the opportunity to be here with you. Thank you for the conversation. And I'm looking forward to seeing you in the stands.
You better believe it. I say. You already know I'm going to be courtside, girlfriend. And like I said, you let me know if you need a little hair. I'm going to hook you up.
I'm letting you know right now. I want some. I love hair.
Well, good. Like I said, you just let us know and reach out to our girl. But I want to thank you so much for joining me today with that beautiful smile, your beautiful energy. And it's just contagious. That smile of yours is just absolutely lovely. As a matter of fact, you remind me a lot of Lisa Leslie with the tone.
I get the way that all the time.
The tone, the way that you speak. You know what I mean? You're just a beautiful lady. So thank you so much for joining Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Darlings, you can follow your girl at Miss Vivica Fox on Twitter and on Instagram at Miss V Fox. Also, follow Stage 29 Podcast too. So don't forget to subscribe, download, and listen to Hustling with Vivica A. Fox. Until next time, darlings, bye for now. The Hustling with Vivica A. Fox podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as a replacement or substitution for any professional medical, financial, legal, or other advice, diagnosis, or treatment. This podcast does not constitute the practice of medicine or any other professional service. The use of any information provided during the podcast is at the listener's own risk. For medical or other advice appropriate to your specific situation, please consult a physician or other trained professional.